Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
There we go. Hello. Happy New Year. Welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence, the first of 2018. I'm your host, Stel, and I'm joined once again by Yannakis, my co-host. I have two special guests. Okay. I keep saying Rod is a special guest, but he's been on here as many times as you. So, yeah, Rodri Giggs is back on. And
well, I've probably been on more times because Jan, you know, he's always off.
That's we don't count him sometimes. He counts as half a person, I guess. So, yeah, that works out.
Happy
right.
New Year, lads.
Happy New Year, yeah.
Yeah,
happy
year.
So, I've introduced Jan, I've introduced Rodri. I'm going to introduce Robbie, a gentleman who hasn't been on for a very, very long time. In fact, for those of you who remember Shoot the Defence back in its infancy, Robbie was one of the originals. Robbie was here during the days of Terry the Testicle, which I'm not going to go into, because it's a PG show. But Robbie, welcome back to the show. How are you doing, mate?
I'm all right, mate. Happy New Year to you and the rest of the team. I hope everybody's well. Ooh. I am all right, before you ask.
Excellent. Great to hear. How was your New Year? Because I've asked the other guys before the show, and I haven't asked you.
Yeah, it was very good.
Have you seen I've cut my Christmas tree down?
You have done already, yeah. I'm quite surprised.
But, why? Yeah. Why are you surprised?
Should be tomorrow.
Why should it be tomorrow?
Tradition is tomorrow.
Tradition for what?
Greek tradition. It's
Greek
tomorrow.
Tradition. Hmm. Right, okay. Now, you see, this year was the first year I had a proper Christmas tree. We've always had artificial trees because, you know, with the pins falling off and everything. I decided in my infinite wisdom that I was going to chop the tree down in the house. Yeah, can you imagine what kind of a mess that made? Yeah, well, because instead of taking the tree out of the house and then cutting the branches off and then putting it in a black bag and then going to the dump, I thought, let me just cut the branches off in the house and then lug it outside and then snap the tree in half and then put it in the green bin, which I managed to do. But my house was like a dead porcupine at the end of it. So you can imagine what kind of a reception I got from the missus when she saw the mess I made.
Surprised you're still alive?
No.
Is that like one of those questions you ask your phone? Siri, how do I arrange for a quick divorce?
Actually, I've got a better idea. Alexa, how do I arrange a quick divorce? She just ignored me. Typical woman. There you go. Right, let's talk about the football then. Since I just made myself look like a complete fool twice in the space of 5 minutes. Let's start with Robbie's beloved Liverpool FC, who they ground out back-to-back 2-1 victories over Leicester and Burnley. Now, Mo Salah was the hero against Leicester again, should I say, after two more goals, adding to the 15 he's already got in the league this season. Meanwhile, at Turf Moor, Ragnar Klavan's winner in injury time extended Liverpool's unbeaten run to 16 games. Yes, that's 1-6. Little man.
Yes.
Two big wins for Liverpool. Mm-hmm. It's obviously a busy fixture calendar for them and everyone else. Yep. They're breathing down the necks of United and Chelsea, and they've got four wins from their last five games. So what do you actually make of their form without being too downhearted, being a United fan and everything?
Excellent form. I think you've got to give Klopp credit because he's learned from last year in a sense of he's rotating his team. He's not afraid to leave. I mean, Coutinho was out injured, but he's not afraid to leave him out. Or Mane out. He's leaving players out so they can be refreshed. And like I said, he's learned a lot from last year and the fact that they had a lot of fatigue issues and a lot of injuries. They're not getting as many injuries this season, Liverpool, to key players, apart from Mane, but he's gone to the African, you know, where he's gone to Senegal and got injured. He hasn't really got injured playing for Liverpool. So maybe the training regime has probably changed a little bit at Liverpool this season as well. Van Dijk coming in is only going to improve that as well. You know, Robbie being a Liverpool fan, he's probably excited of what he's watching, and the future looks good for Liverpool. I keep saying about Liverpool, they're about two or three players away of really challenging Man City. I personally believe Liverpool play better football than Man City.
Oh yeah,
they're more dynamic for me. I like the fact that they're just ruthless. City play the lovely passing football and whatever. Liverpool just go for your throat. They're just, you know, the three up front, the football that they play, they're dynamic and. you know, as you know, as a United fan, it's not nice to watch, but as a neutral, as a football person, they're quite exciting. It is good to watch.
Without being too much like a Sun reporter, do you read anything into Mane's body language? Because he didn't seem happy, even though he scored. And even at full time, he just barely applauded the fans.
I don't know. There was a little spat with Klopp a few weeks back, wasn't it, that they both played it down. So I don't know if there's something there or a whatever.
Continuation of it.
Possibly, you know, Mane throwing a strop or whatever and this and that. But you can't doubt his quality. He's a fantastic footballer. I mean, you know, United were linked with him before he went to Liverpool, and I personally think we should have got him, to be honest. So,
Van Gaal days.
Yeah, so I'm quite gutted. But I don't know. So there could be just a little tiff at the moment. And as long as he's still playing well, you know, Klopp will carry on picking him. And yeah, hopefully his form dies down a bit, but you know,
we'll see. Rod, Klopp has finally got his man Van Dijk, and it looks like the announcement has given Lovren and Klavan some kind of a kick up at the backside, mate. They seem to have stepped it up recently, so why do you think he's actually taken a £75 million signing to get them to finally get it, I guess?
Well, sometimes obviously opposition makes you play better. You're going to be out of the team, so that could be one of the reasons. But you know, they're not world class players, but they're professional footballers. They've got to learn sooner or later, and obviously try and get better, which they have done. And I agree with Jan, that Liverpool are looking really good, and like he says, two or three players are really, really competing over the season. But you know, we'll just have to wait and see.
Fair enough. Now, Rob, I know you've been itching to come on ever since Liverpool started winning under Jurgen Klopp. From a Liverpool's fan perspective, mate, where do you think the team has improved under Klopp? If we're going to be using, I don't know, Brendan Rodgers' almost season as like the barometer.
Yeah, well, to be fair, Jan and Rod have pretty much hit the nail on the head as far as I'm concerned. It's a process. It's a process, right?
And you sound like Louis.
Yeah. No, yes, but no. We're in the middle of that process. And as Jan said, and Roddy agrees, we're two or three players away from being a really top-class side. Naby Keita is coming in next season. There's stories about whether we're going to get Goretzka. We're definitely going to lose Emre Can. Van Dijk's arrived. It's funny. Obviously, there has been talk. I know we're going to come on to Jose later on, but it's kind of interesting in a comparison point of view with Brendan Rodgers that Klopp's message to supporters and in the press is very forthright, and he just says what he thinks. Jose currently seems to be saying things not for the supporters or for the sponsors, but aimed directly at the board to make sure he gets some money next week, you know? And Brendan Rodgers was very fond of saying things in the press that were aimed directly at his players. And the supporters kind of never really got what he was, you know, we all remember the Twitter thing. What was it called? The parody account with Brendan.
Deluded Brendan or something like that.
Deluded Brendan, that was it.
Rod is chuckling there.
No, it was funny, to be fair, it was funny. But still, where Liverpool have improved is Klopp, like all great managers, whether it's Ferguson, Jock Steen, or Clough, whoever you want to mention, all great managers learn quite often by getting things wrong and learning the hard way. And obviously, we have rotated more. That hasn't stopped people on Twitter being very upset that he's rotating, even though they spent most of last year complaining that he didn't rotate. The best microcosm I can give you at the moment is probably Alexander Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's playing fantastically well. He fits the system really, really well. He's playing with a smile on his face. He's performing really well for Liverpool, and it's took him a little bit of time, and he's settled in. And I think that's probably the best example I can give you of where Liverpool are, is that it's going to take time. The difficult thing is that it's not tangible. Until you win a cup, nothing is tangible. And Liverpool have gone far too long without winning any kind of cup. We've come very close since deluded Brendan's days. And you find yourself in a situation where another comparison with Manchester United. Liverpool have signed players, and Man United have done this, and both sides have done this over the last 50 years. They arrive at the club, and all of a sudden, you have to win every game. You have to win every game. You've come from Sunderland, and oh, it's all right if you win two every month. And all of a sudden, you have to produce. And it's huge, a huge, huge amount of pressure, particularly on young players that can't really handle that. Alberto Moreno is a great example. Like, everybody thought we were going to get rid of him in the summer. He's worked really, really hard. He's been absolutely fantastic for us until he got injured. We're getting there. We are. Rodri's right. Jan's right. We are two or three players away. Two or three players away. Could do with a little bit more bench as well. You know, just, but, God, I'm rambling. We're getting there. We're improving from where we were.
Sorry to interrupt, and there's the big question mark over both keepers, so they're going to have to address
Absolutely, yeah, that's spot on. Trying to identify who that keeper is the hard part, because I don't know who it is. I sit there and I look at all the blogs and the sports blogs and football blogs, and I try and suss out who's going to be a good goalkeeper that fits Premiership football. And I think City have stolen a march this year because that guy, what's his name?
Edison.
City's goalie. Yeah, Edison has come in and stolen a march on everybody. He can play the ball. He's pretty good in the air. He talks. Liverpool's big problem is Mignolet, like, might as well be mute. He just doesn't talk. He just doesn't communicate. And Loris Karius looks beautiful. He looks like a model. And yeah, you need, in the Premiership, you need a goalie that's willing to go and get his nose broken. Mm. So, you know, finding who that goalie is. I mean, boys, if you've got a name, let me know, because I can't find one.
Well,
It is what it is, I suppose.
The thing is, for me, watching Liverpool this season, the front three, Mane, Salah and Firmino, what I like about them the most is they're interchangeable. So, you know, one will drift wide right, one will drift wide left, and they cover each other's positions. So that element that surprises there. But not only have they got that, they've got that blistering pace that when you get the ball in behind them, or in behind the full-backs, in behind the central defenders, they don't need to play with the defender's shoulders because they're so quick. They don't need to play that kind of Chicharito kind of thing. So that's how good. But on the flip side, as you mentioned Moreno earlier, Rob, the problem that Liverpool have defensively is individual errors.
Absolutely.
And it's not just one player. It's two, it's three, it's four. Perhaps with Van Dijk there, it will give them confidence, because the same goes with goalkeepers. If their goalkeeper isn't confident with a back four in front of them, or back five, or whatever it is, then they're not going to be confident.
No, absolutely right, yeah.
But you also said that, you know, there are going to be players come in, but players leaving. And as you probably know, in fact, it's not it's common knowledge, you know, unless you've been living under the rock the past 24, 48 hours. Some smart-ass web administrator at Nike thought it would be great to splash the message, Coutinho is ready to light up the Camp Nou. Mm. Now, my instant reaction was more dirty tricks from Barca, but then I remember they've been in trouble before for breaching FIFA's transfer rule. So why would they take such a high-profile, calculated risk? You tell me, Rob.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's that thin line between incredibly brave and incredibly stupid. Of course, if you recall, before Christmas, Atletico, they made a complaint against Barcelona about Antoine Griezmann. Mm-hmm. Let's be frank. We all know that Pep's going. We all know that. We all know, right? That's fine. I said to you on Twitter the other week, I'll enjoy him while I've got him. What Nike have done is very, in many ways, interesting. If you look at it from the perspective of someone that's not a Liverpool fan, and if you check the LFC hashtag, it is, oh my God, just stay away from it. It's just toxic. But Nike want a star player who is Brazilian at Barcelona, because obviously Nike sponsor Brazil. And they want one of these 360 degrees players that can promote across all the lines. Obviously, like, you think of people like Rooney did it for years, didn't he, for Manchester United and England.
We got Pogba doing that for Adidas.
Exactly, yes, exactly. So, and I think some people don't realise just how much power Nike and Adidas have, and they have enormous amounts of power. And it's quite sad in many ways that whether Barcelona knew what was going on, I'm going to say that yes, they did, because quite frankly, we know from past experience just how sneaky and sly they are. The chat today, like, I'm sure you guys have the same things with Manchester United boys, that there are two or three journalists that I implicitly trust. They get things right 95% of the time. And Melissa Reddy from Goal.com briefed this afternoon saying, Felipe Coutinho wants to trade LFC for Barcelona. Now, we all know that. We all knew that back in August. The Reds are more open to considering his exit than they were in the summer. Well, that shouldn't surprise anybody either, because if this is a huge deal, it's not something you can just sort out over 30 days. They probably have been talking over the course of the last 2 or 3 months anyway.
Same with Van Dijk.
Yeah. And they probably will need to for another couple of months.
Well, it's the same thing with Van Dijk then, isn't it? Same
sort of Absolutely. Situation. Exactly right. Exactly right. Same now, situation. When they put that deal in August, like, the add-ons were just so stupid that they must have thought they were just taking the Michael. They really were. It's stuff like, it was 81 million up front and 30 odd million in add-ons. But they included stuff like Liverpool would get 5 million if Brazil won the World Cup, and Liverpool would get 10 million if he won the Ballon d'Or, and things like this that are just like, they're just ridiculous, no guarantee add-ons. Mm-hmm. He's going to go, but I think he'll go in the summer, principally because, having done a bit of digging around, Barcelona have got a huge problem with their wage bill. They have to get a lot of players off their wage bill before they can start doling out 350 grand a week to Felipe. Is he going to go? Of course he's going to go. I'll miss him. He's been great. He's been playing fantastically well for Liverpool recently, so fair dues to the boy, because that's all you can ever ask him. We had the same thing when it happened with Suarez. They had to get Suarez because they were terrified that they were going to get a ban. It looks like the exact same thing's happening now, insofar as Barcelona are getting a twitchy bum because they think they might be in trouble. Let me ask you this, though, guys, particularly you, Rodri. How are they going to play Griezmann and Coutinho and Messi and Suarez together?
And Dembele.
How's that going to work?
And Dembele when he comes back.
And Dembele, I forgot about him. How are they going to do it? How does that work? How do you play all those players?
Well, they'll play
everybody wants the ball all the time.
There's lots of ways they can do it. They can play a free. Obviously, Coutinho's number 10, so you've been behind. So, but, you know, it's...
I think you'll play midfield, Rodri. He'll play in the three. Maybe Busquets, Rakitic, and Coutinho.
Like I said, there's lots of ways that they could do it. There's lots of ways they could do it. They could even put him out on the left and have him coming in. But
that's right.
And Messi doing it on the right on the other side.
Well, look, let's be honest. Messi ain't going to go on forever. He's what, 31, 32?
Yeah.
Right, how long has he got left? I mean, he's a fantastic footballer, but how long is he going to be there for? He's not going to be their poster boy forever, is he? Mm-hmm. Griezmann's still young. Dembele is still young. Coutinho is ultimately being brought in for A, merchandising purposes, and B, to replace Iniesta. Mm-hmm. The thing is, what I need to ask you, Rod, actually, this is what just popped into my head. If you think about how this whole thing has been done with Nike, is this being done by Nike so that effectively Barcelona don't get the rap for it? Because it wasn't on Barcelona's website, was it? It was on Nike's website. So it's kind of them being a little bit mischievous, and Barcelona can turn around and say, well, hang about, this has got nothing to do with us. Yeah. Nola says, they say. Well, then it's not Catalan, is it?
Yeah, well, exactly that's happened, but we all know that Barcelona would have been aware of what's going on. They must have been. There's no way they couldn't have been.
Oh, well, we know this. We know this. Everyone else knows this, but
it's just one of them. They can't prove it.
Exactly.
It's just one of them bully tactics of these big organisations just doing what they want.
Mm. We've seen it time and time again with Real Madrid trying to take players in the past. Is this what we like to call vintage Barcelona now?
It's tapping up in a different sort, isn't it? Ferguson was doing it for years. You know,
yeah, everyone does it. It's like what's happened with Liverpool and Southampton. Liverpool did it with Southampton.
Exactly. Didn't Jose Mourinho top up Ashley Cole as well?
It's just Barcelona, a much bigger club than Liverpool, so that they're having it done to them. It goes on all around the world.
The simple fact is money talks. At the end of the day,
thoughts of it is, he's obviously had a chat with him in the summer and said, you know, you can go, but give us another year. Mm. But this might be Barcelona and Knight working together, thinking, well, let's get him now instead of. But you just never know. But
I'd be surprised if they get him now, though. He can't play in the Champions League. They've virtually won La Liga anyway, Barcelona, this year. So maybe they could wait into the summer. They might even get him cheaper. You don't know.
There's a possibility. But, you know, let's be 100% honest. If they do an unveiling now, they better hope he can do kick-ups better than Paulinho. I'll tell them that. But before we move on to the next matter, Robbie, I know Coutinho is on the verge of leaving or could be leaving, but personally, man, I think maybe Liverpool's biggest loss this season or in this window is the first team development coach, Pep Linders, who actually took...
Yeah, he's gone today, that's right, yeah. He's very, very well respected and very well liked, particularly around the club, and he's still a very young coach as well, and it's difficult because you can't really go, oh, well, you know, you get the opportunity to take the big leap, and all you can do at this point is just wish him well. We will miss him. Absolutely, we will miss him. Whether they're going to bring in Michael Branch,
the ex-Everton striker.
He went to Brazil and then came back, and I can't think of his bloody name. I'm terrible. They might bring him in to replace Pep. I don't think they're going to promote Gerrard just yet, although Gerrard's been doing quite well. So,
it's a big loss.
I
know Gerrard's been at the Liverpool International Academy because our friend Mark obviously works there, and he's told us that Gerrard has been there on numerous occasions to work on it. But I can't see Gerrard getting that kind of role. I mean, let's be 100% honest. No. I mean, you know, this Linders fella, he joined the club in 2014. He was with the under-16s. I mean, to be honest, he's been credited with the emergence of players like Alexander Arnold and Ben Woodburn, and to be a first team development coach for 2 years and to see the club develop in such a way, you know, even Klopp was absolutely gutted to see him go. And, you know, I think that might hamper you guys a little bit. I'm not saying it's going to be a massive loss,
but it could do. It really, really could. He's, as I said, he's got an excellent reputation and he's very, very well liked. And I think that's the thing that sometimes we don't appreciate, like the grind of being a footballer or any kind of professional sportsman, to have like good physios around you and good coaches and people that you get on really, really well with that brighten your day when it gets to be a bit of a slog.
Yeah.
And that's probably where we'll miss his cheeky smile. And he had a great attitude. He was really, honestly, I keep saying he was really well liked. It's a quiet disaster. It's a quiet disaster that will probably go unnoticed by a lot of people. And then one day they'll write a book and someone will go, Pep was brilliant. We miss Pep. It was the same thing when Paco left with Rafa, that everybody absolutely loved Paco. And when he left, fair dues, got the opportunity, things started to decline quite a bit in terms of like just the quality of performance. That little 5% just wasn't quite there a lot of times. And it's a quiet disaster. It's a quiet disaster.
Well, time will tell. Time will tell. Yeah. Right, so while Liverpool's season gets better by the week, Everton's has taken another turn for the worst. A 2-1 loss at Bournemouth was followed by defeat against an underperforming Manchester United. Robbie, mate, I know you're not a fan of Everton, but I know many felt Everton recruited well in the summer and that they'd mount some kind of serious top four challenge. We had that debate on Chig's show beginning of the season, and it hasn't really gone that way, has it? Even with Big Sam at the helm. Now, can you see them splashing the cash this month?
I can see them splashing the cash. I can't see them being able to inspire somebody to join them. They spent a lot of money on a lot of players and it was a very disjointed selection of players. I have a lot of time for Rooney, but like, he's not the player that he was. That's fair enough. But if he wants to come back and it helps sell shirts in China and Asia, that's fine. He scored a lot of goals for him. He's done well. Good Johnson's a great player. Quite how you play the two of them together, it seems a little bit disjointed. Where he does have a lot of joy is he has some really, really talented young players to work with at Everton. He's also got a couple of really good coaches alongside him. You know, again, people talk a lot about Duncan Ferguson as a good coach. Sammy Lee is well respected. Jonjo Kenny, I think the world of Jonjo Kenny. I think he's absolutely wonderful, the young right back. The problem is, like as we found with Giroud came out a couple of weeks ago and said, I would have gone to Everton, but the missus doesn't fancy Liverpool. I think that's kind of an issue for them, is that not that they're not a big club, not that they don't have money, but they find themselves in that little bubble with Borussia Dortmund, to some extent Liverpool, Spurs, maybe even Atletico Madrid. That they're all kind of looking at the same sort of players. They all look at the same kind of guys that they want to sign. And if you got the option of Borussia Dortmund or Everton, or even Atletico Madrid, it's not really going to be a question, is it? Mm. They're having all kinds of trouble trying to get this Turkish lad in, aren't they, at the moment? Who looks a good player, but it's... I don't know. The thing is with Allardyce is he's going to play one brand of football and it's going to get results, although, to be fair, yesterday they looked awful. Mm. Mm. They were really poor.
That's right.
Against United.
That's right.
And they absolutely do need to try and find a striker. It was, in any other walk of life, to lose Lukaku and not bring in a decent replacement would get you sacked. Mm-hmm. In any other walk of life, that's like sticking somebody's mobile phone in the deep fat fryer in McDonald's. Right? You're going to get sacked for it. You know? And, okay, Koeman did. Whether it was Koeman's fault, I don't really know. There definitely were lots of players that were Koeman players, and there were players that weren't really Koeman players, that there was just money balling and can they work it out? And it hasn't. It just hasn't. And
well, look, I've got a question some of his signings. As good as a coach he is, you got to question some of his signings. You know, Morgan Schneiderlin, I cannot understand. I mean, yesterday, he made Ander Herrera look like Zidane. Honestly, that's how bad Schneiderlin is. And Rod, you know, United, they've been absolutely poor recently, really bad against Southampton. They stepped up at Goodison. But were you surprised with how comfortable it was? Because we know that Everton is always a difficult place for United to go to. The atmosphere is hostile, but I didn't hear anything.
I just think probably with our squad and their squad, and you know, with the festive period games and them being at Bournemouth, which is this long way. I don't know if they flew or they surely would have flown back. So the travelling wouldn't have been that bad. And we just caught them on a good day, to be honest. And United were really good, but Everton were equally poor. But it was a long festive period for them. And obviously, it hit them on that game. Mm. Luckier for us.
The thing is, when I saw that Everton lineup, I thought, you know what, this doesn't...
It doesn't scare you.
Yeah. I mean, look, Keane has just come back from an injury, so he's not 100%. Schneiderlin
and Rooney in midfield.
Exactly. And then they had Yannick Bolasie wide left.
Who hasn't played for how long?
Exactly.
About 18 months. First game back, wasn't it?
Yeah.
He had a good game though, didn't he? I thought he did all right.
For someone that's just come back from
an Allardyce player, isn't he, boys? Yeah. Let's be honest. He's an Allardyce style player.
Yeah, I thought he did okay.
But then Umar Nias, I mean, I don't know whether he's a dirty player or whether he's clumsy, because the free kicks that he gives away, they look snidey, but when he gets up, he's like, oh,
was that
I didn't mean it kind of thing. Yeah. So I don't, you know, but you're right. When you look at players like Duncan Ferguson, that's on the bench, what, you know, ex-players like Duncan Ferguson on the bench watching this team, he looks at Bolasie, he's looking at Lennon that can put balls in the box, he's looking at Rooney, he's thinking, God, I wish I was still playing, because I would be gobbling up everything that comes to us. And then you look at who they got, and
they've got absolutely nothing.
You know. Mm. But you know,
I go back to what you said about Koeman and questioning his signings. How can you not sign a striker? I mean, he tried to sign Sandro, but to replace Lukaku with Sandro, it was never going to work. That not signing somebody to replace Lukaku cost him his job. Simple as that.
No, I agree. But the problem is, and it goes back to what we said a couple of years ago when Liverpool signed Benteke for 30 million of Aston Villa, people were saying, you know, oh, it was a bad move. And okay, for enough, it ended up being a bad move.
But it wasn't a bad move.
You're thinking, well, who could you buy that's a proven goal scorer in the Premier League for that amount of money? Right. Yeah. You know, and who could Everton have signed? And like Robbie said,
he went for Giroud, didn't he? And he couldn't get it. I think Giroud turned them down last minute, didn't he?
He said his missus didn't want to go. His missus didn't want to go, but...
He signed too many number 10s as well, didn't he, still?
Yeah.
Rooney, Sigurdsson, Klaassen.
The lad, yeah.
All in the same position.
Klaassen, like, I like him, but by God, he's just never going to be able to, like, survive in the Premiership.
You can't get in the team.
He's a good player, but not, like, the Premiership just doesn't suit him.
No.
Also, he'd be great in France or in Italy, but he's just going to get battered, you know? Like, Bojan gave it a good old red hot... He gave it a red hot crack, didn't he? He really tried his heart out for about a month at Stoke as a little lad. But it's still... It's not just the physicality, it's the pace of the game.
Mm.
It's just too fast for him. I just don't think he's got it. I think he's a good player, but I just don't think he's ever going to fit Premiership football.
That's
a Moneyball kind of punt, isn't it?
And that's a very good segue for me, Rob, because I was going to ask you about Jesse Lingard. I actually didn't think he'd ever make it at United. Last season, as you and Rod know, Rod will be laughing his ass off at this one. I mean, Lingard is in the form of his life at the moment. What do you put this down to?
Hard work, determination to get into the team, proven a lot of us wrong, you know, United fans who give him a bit of stick, I guess. You give him a lot, to be fair. You got to give him credit. You know, you have to. He's put his head down, he's working hard, he's scoring goals. This kind of number 10 position, he's excelled in it, hasn't he? He's scoring goals, he's got assists, he's working hard, he looks influential in the team. You know, as a United fan, a month ago, you think, oh, Lingard in the team, great. Now, you want him to start every game. That's kind of the form he's been in. And you've got to give Mourinho credit as well. I mean...
What? what did you just say? Yeah, the guy that you wanted sacked last week, you think he's giving you credit?
It's not about wanting him sacked, though. It's about...
Rod, he wanted Mourinho sacked last week. I don't know if you heard. He wanted Mourinho sacked last week.
I just think with Mourinho...
I've seen that tweet.
Yeah. I just think United under Mourinho should play a different style with different ambition. But we're not going to go into the Mourinho. I'm going to talk about Mourinho, the manager, and what he's done with Lingard. Because Mourinho gets a lot of bad kind of publicity for not playing youngsters or not giving them a chance. Listen, he's giving players a chance at United. And for that, you have to credit him. Even if it works or not, he's actually giving them a chance. And the fact that he's showing faith in Lingard, and even Rashford, who Rashford's having an appalling time, but I'm not going to get into the Rashford situation. You know, for me, you've got to credit the manager for giving him the confidence to go and excel and giving him that number 10 role as well. Because nobody would have thought Lingard can go and play number 10. Mm. He's always played either wide left, wide right. He's never got the opportunity to play in that number 10 role. Now, he's got it due to the fact that everybody else has been rubbish there. There's, you know, your mate Mkhitaryan, you know, one of them. But you still got to take your chance playing in that position and... Full credit to Lingard.
Do you know what? I think it makes a big difference that Mata's there as well, because Lingard gets in between the lines. Yeah. And obviously Mata isn't as quick, but he's quick up here.
Yeah, so Mata could play them little balls in behind the lines and then Lingard with his pace. The thing is as well, with Martial and even Rashford, they exchange quite well as well, because they can go and drift and play in different positions, and they've got the understanding. Listen, when United get it right up front, they're not bad. It's just the fact that, for me, they're just too negative in approaches of the games. But like yesterday, I can't criticise United yesterday. I thought they were brilliant. Even in the first half, it was 0-0. You know, they were patient, they penetrated, they created chances. And second half, two fantastic goals. Controlled the whole game at Everton, where, you know, traditionally, you know, Scousers against Manx, it's always hostile. It wasn't there yesterday. Mm-hmm. United quieted down the crowd. And it was a very, very good United performance yesterday. I was impressed.
Yeah, Pogba stepped up in the position, obviously.
The position that he's got to play in, exactly. It's just little tweaks like that maybe the manager... Listen, you know, who am I to tell Mourinho how to do his job? At the end of the day, Mourinho's track record and wherever he's gone and this and that. I'm just talking from a United perspective that I believe we should play better football and more attacking. But if United play like they did yesterday, I'll be more than happy.
Can I just chime in? I just wanted to say that the thing about Lingard is, I can remember watching Lingard playing for England under 21s. It was the first time I really got to watch him, really. And I thought, like, there's a player here, but he's a bit wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
And is he 23 now?
24.
So my point is this, is that you're watching the boy at City as well that was at Liverpool. What's he
Sterling.
Called?
Sterling.
Sterling. And you're watching Lingard, and they're quite similar, but different, but they're similar. And my point is this, is that as football supporters, as people that watch the game, you're always looking for the progression to be linear, for everyone to go in a forward motion, always going up. And life and football doesn't work that way, and it's going to go like that, up and down. And that's what's happened here, is that they've had a sharp incline in improvement, a building of confidence, and they're both of them are performing really, really well. If you'd have said to me at the start of the season that Lingard's going to go to the World Cup, I'd have laughed at you.
Mm.
Now, he's one of the first names on the list. And you can do nothing but credit the lad for hard work, because that's what he's done. He's had a nice run in the team. He's played really well. He's scored some really important goals. You can't fault the guy. So when we give somebody a drilling when they're playing badly, fair enough. But when they're playing well, it's absolutely right that we celebrate them and say, fair dues, mate, you've proved me wrong.
Robbie, just to add to
that, Lingard's proved us wrong.
He's got fight in him, Lingard. That's what I like about him. The fact that he plays for the shirt, like, you know, we all know he loves United and stuff as well. But the fact he's small, he's not the biggest of guys, but he's got heart. And the fact is, as United fans, you know, I've never criticised him for his what work he does ethic. For his work ethic. He always gives 100%.
He's
always
the perpetual motion.
Yeah, he's always quality that hasn't been there, or the consistency. But I mean, even Van Gaal, I don't know if you remember, he played him right wing back. In one of his first games.
He was left wing back on his debut.
How can you play Lingard left wing back? I mean, how's he going to excel playing in positions that, you know...
Van Gaal made a lot of strange decisions, like making Phil Jones take corners, but when we're talking about managers, and I didn't know whether I should add this into the show or not, because we could go on forever, but Mourinho's comments about Paul Scholes and what he said about Paul Pogba, what do you make of it? Because me personally... I think he's well within his rights. Someone finally stood up and said something said about Paul Scholes, because him, Rio Ferdinand, all these other guys, they seem to have little digs at Mourinho, and he's backed off the whole time. Mm. And now he said something. All of a sudden, Jose's wrong. Why?
If you're asking me, I'm not going to sit here and be a hypocrite, because I've criticised United and Mourinho and the style of football. I'm guessing for someone like Scholes and Ferdinand, who played at United with the traditional way, etc., winning things, maybe watching this kind of United and this style doesn't appeal to them. Listen, ex-players are going to criticise the players. They're going to criticise the manager. I mean, if you're going to be a pundit, you're there to be shot. Look at Gary Neville. He does Sky Sports. You know, he's not always biased. You know, it's their jobs now. Unfortunately, they're going to come out and say, you know, United were poor, Pogba didn't play well, etc., this and that. Inside them, what they might want to say and what they say on the telly is two different things, but I think Mourinho's feeling the pressure at United, though, still. I really do. I think the fact that he's been there and he's not challenging, and it was supposed to be, you know, one of the aims that he was there in the first... I think the pressure's got to him. And until he gets the players possibly that he wants, and, you know, what Robbie said, he keeps hinting about he wants the money to build United. He needs the money to build United. And for me, if he's not given that money in the summer, I think he's going. I think he'll walk.
I think, I agree.
I think 100%
I agree. And the thing is, all of this is a culmination of what's been happening over the years under the change of management, the poor recruitment, the poor investment in the academy.
Yeah.
And for Mourinho to come out to say what he did against about Paul Scholes, I think it's taken balls.
Yeah, it has done.
Rod, I know you read a tweet earlier about Paul Scholes. You made a comment about it. What do you make of it? Because for me personally, I've seen Rio try throw managers under the bus. I've seen Scholes do it. I've seen Phil Neville do it on the BBC. It seems to me there's a bit of an agenda with these Class of 92 guys. What do you make of that tweet that was put out earlier, that mate of yours?
Yeah, like I said to him last night, I totally disagree with what he said and agreed with what Mourinho said. Some of them have slide digs, and some of them, you know, they're well within the rights of the slide digs because they've had such a good career at Manchester United. But, you know, when it's constant and when it's one person and it's the other one, you know, Mourinho's right. Look at his record. They've got a record, a good record in playing, but that playing career is over now. If they want to be a good... carry on with a career, then get into coaching, get into managing, and do what Mourinho's doing and Hannah's done, instead of having these sly little digs and being what's the word?
Sly?
No, he says sly.
Yeah, they're being very overcritical, and sometimes it's right and sometimes it's wrong, but you know, they go back to when they played, and when them days are over, that football's done. It's a new modern game now, so it's a different way of coaching, different mentality, different players. They haven't got that old school mentality. You can't go on and kick people to death and bully people and intimidate people like they used to. It's just not there anymore. It's just not that mentality.
Rob, can I ask you a question, mate? If United were doing well, in hindsight, of course, they wouldn't be criticising, would they? I just don't think they're saying what we as United fans think. I mean, Moyes got a lot of stick for negative football. Van Gaal, we eventually got him out. Mourinho's not doing any better in a sense of the style of football.
But these negative pundits who are commenting,
yeah,
were involved in David Moyes' reign. They were coaching in Manchester United.
No, I agree, but
they're going about criticising one of the most successful managers that the Premier League that we've seen in Jose Mourinho is just a bit over the top. And if you want to do something about it, get on the training pitch and be a coach. Don't take the easy option and being a pundit. That's easy. Mm. Get on the coaching, get on the training field and do it. Gary Neville tried it. That's why he's back to pundit, because he was no good. But he's a good pundit.
Yeah.
But as a coaching, we've seen how that went.
No, I agree, mate. But what I'm saying is, if United's results were a lot better, if they were challenging, if they were.
I still think they would have sly digs saying, yeah, it's good football. Yeah, but I still think they'd have their sly little digs saying, it's not the football that Manchester United expects it.
Yeah, I agree.
I really do believe that. Even though if they were winning.
Yeah.
They used a way of playing, the Manchester United way. Jesse Lingard is a perfect example. He knows Manchester United through and through. He knows the way they want to play. Attack, 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 attack. And you're seeing the rewards from it. So,
yeah. I just wanted to say, boys, is it worth mentioning that these sly digs that come from these players all happen to be on BT Sport most often?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a very cynical guy, as you know. And I know a fair bit about the TV industry. And that's what I studied at uni. Ever since BT have got the rights to a lot of the football, they have done everything in their power to sensationalise literally everything.
Yeah.
So much so that they let Robbie Savage talk. You know,
and Chris Sutton.
Chris Sutton is another example. And I often wonder if things are being encouraged to be said by senior producers so that they get trending on Twitter and, you know, they can... Just, you know, so that they're trending. Like Stella and I see this all the time with WWE wrestling, that things are done and said, not because they're the best thing that should happen, but purely so that they trend on Twitter.
Robbie, and I think, to your point, what you're saying is probably true, but it's the fact that there's a lot more ex-United players on BT.
Yeah, that's true, because all the Liverpool ones are on Sky.
Michael Owen.
Yeah, but listen, with Sky...
Gerrard's on BT. I don't think that concerns Paul Scholes in making a headline. Robbie Savage, maybe, because, you know, he was an average player. Paul Scholes was the best player I've ever seen. So I think Paul Scholes was just being honest, but... He was brutally honest and a bit unfair, because Paul Pogba's been brilliant this year and he's just come back from 2 months being injured. He's had a bad couple of games and the knives are out. I just think it was
I agree with you there, Rod. I mean, again, it's this thing about improvement is not linear. It isn't. It's one of these things where he's just come back from injury. Give him a bit of time to find some form first before you start sticking the boot into the boy.
Yeah.
I mean, listen... Pogba is a special player. We know he's a special player. We know that you look at that guy and you go, there's a guy that can play in the Premiership. Look at him physically, look at his attributes. Special player, right? But the player that he is now and the player that he's going to be in 3 or 4 years' time couldn't be more different. The player that I expect him to become in 3 or 4 years' time is really, really special.
He doesn't have the players around him, though.
Well, he might do by then.
He struggles as well.
That's another thing that Paul Scholes had and all they had. They had quality in every position. Yeah. They know what people's going to do. He's obviously got a good reputation with Pogba at the start of the season. Obviously, he went out and then Pogba's form's dipped. That's no coincidence. That's happened. So it's, you know, Paul Scholes had a world of talent around him. Manchester United aren't there at the minute. He's built Mourinho's getting to there. He's getting there. You know, it's going to take obviously a little bit more time because obviously City are doing so well, but you know they're not going to play like that forever. I can truly believe that. You know, and we will catch them up, but it's just going to take obviously a little bit of time. It just really annoys me when these so-called United pundits have a sly dig and you know I know Paul Scholes, he's not making a headline, he's just being honest, and sometimes he's just a bit brutal honest and a bit over the top for me. That's all.
Thing is, Rod, for me, there's always this very cynical side and a very sceptical side, and I always think that a lot of these guys have got an agenda for whatever reason, and then I look at all these coaches that Sir Alex Ferguson has got, like he's like a little puppeteer, isn't he? He's got all these people under his, you know, tied up and everything. And I'm looking at people that he wanted to achieve great things in football. I look at Steve McLaren, didn't do too much in management. I'm looking at Mike Phelan that was sacked at Hull. I'm looking at Rennie Meulensteen who was sacked at Fulham. I'm looking at Gary Neville, as you mentioned. I'm looking at Phil Neville who went to coach and he didn't do too much. Look at Roy Keane, he did nothing as a coach. So, you know, then I see like the likes of Paul Scholes and Nicky Butt is the only one that's really doing anything with that.
He's at the academy.
You can see he's doing something. Why are these people having a dig at these United players? They want the club to do well, but they're not going to do well if you're constantly digging at these players. I don't remember Phil Thompson having digs at Liverpool players. I don't remember Mick Quinn having digs at Liverpool players. I don't see McManaman. I don't see Gerrard.
If I can just chime in, I remember near the end with Houllier, almost every former Liverpool player was having a massive dig at Gerard Houllier, and that remembering that he just had a heart attack 18 months beforehand. Right, and Ronnie Whelan and Aldridge and people like that were absolutely vicious. Vicious. And I kind of hope that's not going that way. I don't think it is going that way with United, but I will say this. There was a thing that I saw last night when I was watching the game, and a fan beckoned Jose over for a selfie. And Jose chimed in, went in, leant in like that, blank expression on his face. He doesn't look like he's having fun. And
I've said this for a while.
Is his dream job. And he doesn't look like he's enjoying it. And that, whether you like Jose or not, that's tragic for anybody. You wouldn't wish that on anybody. Well, he doesn't look like he's having a good time.
I don't believe it's dream job. If it's his dream job, you'd have all your family living in one place. Yeah. His family's 200 miles away. It is his dream job, but it's not his dream situation because his wife's living 200 miles away, and he's on his own living in a hotel. That's
100% correct, Rod. I think that again, like where we see people like footballers and football managers as celebrities and. They are people. He does miss his family. We have to try and respect that and take that into consideration. So, lesson learned. I've thought that one through, and I think you're right. I agree with you. But...
No, in my opinion, it's his dream job because Manchester United is the biggest club in the world, and Mourinho is all about me.
Do you agree that he doesn't look like he's in a great, you know, shape of mind at the moment?
He's not. I'd be the same because he's second. He's second in the league. He wants to be number one. He's a winner. So I wouldn't be happy either. But, you know, he's a winner. He wants to be number one and he's not. And it's obviously frustrating. He's not happy about it.
Is it also the fact that it's City above you?
I'd be more annoyed if it was Liverpool or Chelsea.
I mean, from like a neutral's point of view, I remember watching all that kicking off between Jose and Pep when they were at Real Madrid and Barcelona. And honestly, I really don't want that kind of stuff happening here. You know, I just found it all a bit crass. I don't think we need it.
Guardiola was too experienced for all that, and I think they've been through all again. I don't think that would happen.
Yeah, I don't think he'd be intimidated quite so much this time. Yeah.
I mean, just to put
I hope it doesn't happen anyway, sir.
I just think the problem at United is upstairs.
We
know that. That's where the problem lies at United.
Anyway, right. Speaking of problems upstairs, Newcastle, they may be without a home win in the league since October, but their 1-0 victory against Stoke at the Britannia was the first time they've won back-to-back away from home in the Premier League since 2014. Now, Rod, Newcastle, they hadn't scored in four out of their previous five games, although their pace on the counter-attack was always going to cause problems for Stoke. Now, Benitez surely deserves a lot more credit for keeping the Geordies away from the relegation zone with the squad that they got and the lack of resources as well.
Have we lost him?
Rod?
Hello?
He's got to get a pie.
Off, then.
So he's gone for a drink, hasn't he?
He's got to get, a beer.
He's gone for a Holland's pie.
Now I can hear you go on, mate.
There he is.
So yeah, Benitez, do you think he deserves a lot more credit for the way that Newcastle have been playing at the moment, especially he's keeping them out of the relegation zone, and he hasn't got many resources, has he?
Well, it's recently about Rafa Benitez. He's managed Real Madrid and he's won Champions League at Liverpool. He's a world class manager. Newcastle are lucky to have him, and he's obviously doing a good job with limited resources there. And, you know, sooner the takeover, the better for Rafa, because he could get them up there. Because obviously, Newcastle's a well-supported club, it's a big club, and Rafa's a good manager, so if you give him the resources, I'm sure he'll do well for him.
I agree. I just think he's got a championship squad there, and he's about 2 or 3 players from having a mid-table team, but right now they're squad.
Yeah, he needs to find a striker.
Well, it was my tip for him to go down. I thought them, it was them, who was it?
Huddersfield?
Ben Huddersfield and Swansea, yeah.
Yeah. Mm. So he's probably getting.
But they've got Luton on Saturday in the cup, and I think if they had I don't think Rafa's somebody that learned the hard way about the FA Cup. If you remember when Bolton beat Liverpool, I think they've got Luton at home. I think a nice cup run would do them a world of good, and I think that any kind of trophy would be wonderful for them. But by God, do they need to find some goals from somewhere?
Mm.
It's not just Everton looking for a striker, is it? Let's be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, are they going to take a punt on Danny Ings from Liverpool, by the sounds of things?
Well, that could work well. That could
which
work
which
really
is great.
Well.
You know, I wish the boy all the best.
That's right. And mate, 3 draws, 2 losses for Burnley in the last 5 games. They're only 4 points ahead of Leicester now. Do you think the wheels have come off, or are they just missing too many key players?
I just think the expectancy of what they've done this season is just exceeded all expectations of everybody. I think Burnley have been phenomenal. If any team in the Premiership deserves credit, it's them. You know, again, if you want to talk about limited resources, the players that they lost in the summer, what they've recruited and what they're doing, it's phenomenal. Sean Dyche deserves a lot of credit for what he's done at Burnley. I mean, it's come to a point now where we expect Burnley to start, you know, winning instead of we're questioning if they're drawing or losing a game now. That's how far we kind of respect Burnley. They got a good point at United. They were 2-0 up. They could have won the game. They've got Brady's been a big miss for them. He's a good player, Robbie Brady. And since he's got a serious knee injury, so they're missing him. But they'll find a way. They'll be safe. They'll be all right. They'll bounce back. They'll go and beat somebody that nobody expects, and all of a sudden they might go on a run again. So they were lucky at the weekend as well. 94th minute winner again by Liverpool. So that could easily have been another draw, and it would have been a good result.
Funny, Jan, isn't it? You know, late goals have a way of working themselves out, don't they? That Burnley have scored late goals a lot this season, and sooner or later someone's going to score a late one on them. But they've I was fully impressed when I watched them yesterday. Nobody goes to Turf Moor and gets an easy ride of things. And Dyche is really, really good at setting up your team, and he does this great thing with his midfield where you sort of sit there and go like, just go a little bit forward more. They're giving you that little bit of space, and they're just trying to lull you into a false sense of security, and then they just whip. You think you've got a one-on-one, and all of a sudden there's 3 of them around you. The work rate of those lads is absolutely superb. Superb. And you can't, like, as a football supporter, what can you ever ask? That's the work hard.
With Burnley, Rob, is that, forget the whole working hard thing, they do the basics well. Yeah.
And
by that I mean, you know, if they're going to punt the ball long,
they'll play the channel and get someone to run after it.
Not just that, it's just that they'll win the first ball, and then if they don't, then they'll do their best to win the second. Again, it's just the basics. Which a lot of the big teams, really, apart from City, I'd say, aren't doing well. And I think that's probably why they're getting a lot of last minute goals, because they're just consistently just going for
absolutely
the throat.
I've been reading a lot at the moment about like the All Blacks, and I've been doing loads of stuff about sports psychology to help my brother, but the All Blacks are the best rugby team in the world, not because they have all the skill in the world, but literally because they do the basics better than anybody else. And that's what Burnley are doing. And they're a very well-run club as well, off the pitch as well, you know. I think that's really admirable. They put a lot of money into their academy, and it's doing really, really well. And every once in a while, they get a little gem from Man United, as we've seen. But I'll ask you this one very quickly, just as a side note. Would you take Ben Mee to the World Cup? because I would.
Not without that experience.
I'm anybody's for like a defender that can defend. And Ben is the best example I can think of at the moment.
If England are relying on Chris Smalling and Tim and Gary Cahill, then take whoever you want, mate. Honestly, take whoever you want.
Sorry, going back to what you asked me. If you think about Burnley,
about New Year's.
Going back to that, yeah, they've lost 3 points in the 93rd minute in two games. If you think about it,
yeah.
You know, United Lingard last minute, well, 92nd minute, and then Clavin getting the win.
I was at that game. I watched the first 50-60 minutes, and you know, Manchester United absolutely battered them, but they were 2-0 up.
Yeah,
they were so well drilled.
Yeah,
but in the last 10-15 minutes. That's why I'm not surprised what Jan's just said there. The last 10-15 minutes, literally every single player was on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
They were just knackered.
Yep.
And it's obviously just catching up with at the end of games, and that's why they're losing. Obviously, the lack of players that leave, they're injured, and it's just catching up within the last 10 minutes.
It's a thin squad. Must be a thin squad.
Lack of concentration at the end, yeah.
Rob, interesting.
Consciously thought they actually look on the feet and they look knackered, but they still kept on going, obviously, but United got two back.
That's right. And Rob, interesting one here. Swansea chairman Hugh Jenkins said he's actually prepared to quit the club after accepting responsibility for their position, something I'd never expect from a chairman. Now, he also admitted his regret for not pursuing a deal to bring Brendan Rodgers back in the summer. Now, surely this not only undermines Paul Clement, who did a fairly decent job back in the last season, but also heaps pressure on new boss Carlos Carvajal.
Yeah, it's an unusual statement. I think it's kind of designed to say it's not Carlos's fault if we go down.
Yeah.
It's not Paul's fault if we go down. It's my fault. And I think that's all well and good saying something like that when you are walking away from the club in the summer anyway, and you've made a lot of money selling the club to new American owners. I suppose it's kind of like a bit of a Judas statement insofar as he feels guilty. He's took his silver and now he's off ski. the thing about it is like when you say things like bringing Brendan Rodgers back, firstly, we all know the golden rule. You never go back. It doesn't work. But it's a statement that somebody at Swansea would go, oh, I like the sound of that. Oh, that sounds like a really good idea. But he could have said Michael Laudrup. And somebody would have gone, oh, I like the sound of that. That sounds like a good idea. I really like Paul Clement. If I was Arsene Wenger, I would be bringing him in as a coach alongside Bald right now. I think he's a great coach. Is he a manager? Probably not. They have got serious problems. They've sold, again, this is a side that sold their two best players and haven't replaced them. Good Johnson scored a lot of goals for them, particularly from set pieces. Llorente chimed in with not a lot of goals, but important goals. Goals that got them wins, goals that got them draws. Look, they're going down and it looks bad and it's a shame. And they will probably bounce back. But the one thing you have to admire is they've always tried to employ managers about that culture and that brand of football. They want to play positive football. As soon as Pulis lost his job, everybody said, oh, he'll go to Swansea. And Swansea didn't do that. And in many ways, that's kind of admirable from like a moral point of view. Whether that's going to save them, it probably isn't. It probably isn't. Yeah, they need goals.
They won their first game against Watford under Carvajal. Right. That's like, you know, the new manager bounce. And it gave them a glimmer of hope. But then they faced Spurs tonight. They lost 2-0, which a game that's, let's be honest, they were going to lose anyway.
Yeah.
But... you know, surely, but I like Carvajal. I think he was unlucky when they got to the playoff final Sheffield Wednesday and they lost to Hull. I think, okay, he's had a bad season so far this season, but it does seem a bit of an odd appointment because if you look at the previous, you know, Swansea managers, I know they had Martinez and Laudrup, and this one came about left field, didn't it? Because it's very rare for a manager who's recently been sacked from a Championship side to get a Premier League job. So either
what's that? He'll get preparing us back in the chat. Yes,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Preparing for the next season.
Absolutely.
You reckon?
I agree.
It has to be. Carvajal knows the Championship. All right, hence he did well at Sheffield Wednesday. Actually,
He's a very bullish coach.
He is. He plays decent football. He doesn't take no rubbish from the players, which is good. Swansea have recruited so badly this season is unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, Renato Sanchez, one of the biggest things supposed to be coming out of football. How bad is he as a football player at this precise moment?
Wasn't he playing left wing back in Clement's last game?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he signed, was it Mesa from Las Palmas for like 10, 11 million? Yeah. I mean, these players are not going to keep you in the Premiership. You know, you need to go and buy established Premiership players to get you out of the trouble that, you know, that it is. So, you know, what Robbie was saying, what the chairman's doing is diverting all the blame onto himself. As in, blame me, it's my fault, don't blame the managers, because they know they're going to go down. And they've just got Cavrahal to if they stay up, fantastic. If not, he's going to build them for next season in the Championship and hopefully, for their sake, come up first time. I don't think they will if they go down. I don't think you'll see Swansea. Yeah, absolutely.
It'll take a long, long while. Right, in other news... Was that Rod?
Sorry, mate.
Good riddance to
lovely. Right, in other news, Diego Costa was officially unveiled as Atletico Madrid and told the press he's in better shape and he's ready to help the team score goals. Now, Rob, Barcelona, 9 points clear of Atletico Madrid. Can you see this transfer being significant in any way?
Not really, no.
What about Europa League? They're in the Europa League. He's not cup-tied.
That's what I was about to say. Not in terms of them winning the league, no. The Europa League, it's a very interesting signing. The thing about Atleti is you know what you're going to get, and then you've got to stop them. And of course, he's going back to a club that he knows. He's as a person and a personality, he seems to represent like the way that they play football and their attitude to football perfectly, really. You know, that he's aggressive. He's a bit of a beast. He's a bit of a bad sod sometimes. And, you know, he's just gnarly and a bit of a grok that you can't really handle. I still expect him to be able to go back to La Liga and just bully people. So, maybe, but I don't see Barcelona dropping any points, really. So in that respect, you look to the Europa League, and that's where you think that he's a player that can make a big, big difference.
I think Koscielny, as we saw last year, with him again.
Zlatan last year in the Europa League for United was wonderful. You know, absolutely wonderful. Admittedly, once you beat Anderlecht, it looked like you were going to win the cup, but that kind of character that's been there and done it, great player. Terrible attitude. What are you going to do? He got what he wanted in the end. He got home.
Yeah, got his own way. Got his own way.
Was it like a false statement by someone of Atletico Madrid or Diego Costa? They said, oh, he's back and he's going to help us in the Champions League. And Atletico are not in the Champions League. I don't know if anyone read it or not.
Must have been someone from Nike doing it.
Possibly. Nike, yeah. It was on the Nike website,
Possibly, yeah. So, that was quite funny.
The letter
go,
no lo sé.
No Champions League.
Right, Inter drew 0-0 against Lazio, though. It could have been far worse for Spalletti's man had VAR not taken centre stage and saved the day. Now, Lazio were awarded a penalty for handball before the decision was reversed. Now, Simone Inzaghi, the Lazio manager, criticised the system, saying it takes the excitement out of the game. Players don't hug each other anymore. Instead, they look straight towards the referee. Whoever floats your boat, mate. Mate, we know you're not a fan of VAR, as you've told us time and time again. But I personally think it's a bit pathetic reason to be against it. I mean, isn't that sour grapes a bit?
No, I want to hug Inzaghi for saying that. I agree. 100. I've been saying this for a while. Everyone keeps talking about the VAR and he's going to, you know, decisions. We're talking about contentious Arsenal decision and it takes the excitement out of football. He's absolutely right. You don't know whether you're going to celebrate a goal these days because you're going wild with the fans. All of a sudden, he blows the whistle. He goes and watches the telly for 5 minutes. No goal, offside. What's the point? All right, he's got the decision right. It kills football. It kills football. It's
Jan. Honestly, I couldn't agree with you. I couldn't disagree with you more.
Could disagree?
Oh, disagree?
No, listen. There's two things. I think.
Sit down.
All right.
You don't have a valid point. You do have a valid point. There's two serious problems that I have, and I think it chimes in with what you're saying. I watch a lot of cricket. I watch a lot of rugby.
Yep.
I have seen rugby games decided in the dying seconds by these sort of things.
It's a different game.
Television loves it. It builds jeopardy, gets people all excited.
No.
Comes up on the big screen, and it's like, yeah!
It's a different game, Robbie. Football is entertaining, fast sport where incidents happen every single second.
Of course, it's a different game. But television is still television.
Okay.
Still television. What concerns me the most is this: is that I'm of the opinion that somebody at FIFA doesn't like, shares your opinion, doesn't like it, doesn't want it. And if they don't get the way that they handle it correct, that would be the undoing of it. They have to do what they do in cricket, where the commentators have to be completely silent. The stadium announcer has to tell the supporters in the ground what is going on, what is being checked quickly. And whoever's, the referee that's sorting out the situation has to talk you through what they're looking for.
It's not
in cricket, over the course of the last couple of years, they've done it really well.
It's right? not fair to
Robbie. Because if you don't, it just leads you open to what you're talking about. This opportunity to say, oh, well, you know, what was he looking at? Why was he looking at that? What was that? Was he offside? Is he offside? Did the ball cross the line? Is it a foul? And I don't want it for everything. I'm the same as you. I don't want it for everything, but there's been so many dubious goals that something had to happen. My concern is that because everything is so... Television is more important than you and I as supporters, right? I don't like saying that, but unfortunately, it's the truth. TV is more important than you and me.
Mm-hmm.
And they are much more concerned about something looking a lot more exciting on the telly than they are about whether or not you and I are annoyed. Let's put it that way. Whether or not... honestly, I've sat in stadiums and watched it happen in rugby games where people, they know they've gone to the TMO and they have no idea why. They have no idea why. So unless they get that element right from the off, it really could head for disaster.
The only thing I've got to say about that, Rob, is when it comes to dubious decisions, like for example the handball, we saw the Arsenal one the other day.
Mm.
Do you think it would have been given had it not been for VAR? So if VAR was there anyway, would they have given that penalty? Because it was a very dubious decision. It was one of those, was it ball to hand? Was it? I don't think
seen them given, haven't you?
You have seen them given. Yeah. But this one,
that's
saying,
definitely
like,
one. That for me, that's definitely one that would have been overturned. That was a joke.
Yeah. Exactly, because I'm sitting there thinking, has the handball rule changed? Because you got the whole before it was
ball to hand,
and then it was intentional. Chambers had his arm across his body, so yeah. It's.
But he made a slight movement as well, didn't he?
But did he?
That's a thing. Well, it depends.
How did you know?
No.
Answer my question. How did you know that he made a slight movement?
By moving his.
No. Did you know when you first saw it? Did you see him make the slight movement?
No.
But you saw it in the replay.
Yeah.
Right.
But the referee only gets one chance to see it. Now, but
when they have VAR, he would have seen that.
Yeah, but you could still give it. He might still look at it and go, "Yeah, I'm still right. It's a pen." You know, like us, there's four of us here talking about that incident. I might think it's a pen. You three might not. But I could be the referee watching that VAR and still give it.
Yeah, that's the thing. That is the point.
Well, one second, mate. So what is the point then for me having a referee in a game managing all the decisions if you're going to watch the telly, watching every incident, telling Stale, that's a pen, mate, I need you to review it. You might as well stop every incident.
Bang about.
You can have a contentious corner that will lead to a goal in the 93rd minute. And they might go, oh, that wasn't a corner, actually. What do you do? Do you go back and watch the telly again because it wasn't a corner?
No, but listen, you've been...
There's different ways you can do it. You can have two challenges per game.
Yeah, like they do in the NFL. That's right.
So what happens,
Rod? Every 2 minutes, the manager says, no, you need to have a look at that again.
All right, but what happens, Rod? If you use your two challenges during the game and in the 93rd minute, in a Champions League final, he's gone out for handball, clear as a pen, but he's got no challenges to appeal it. For me, you know, maybe call me old-fashioned, even though I'm not old. But this is what we talk about as lads, as females, about the football. Yeah. You get together with your mates, and you're going, that's never a pen. You're going, yes, it was.
You're still going to get them decisions. You get them in rugby where you're saying that was definitely not a try, but he's given a try. You still get them decisions. Believe it or not, you still get them.
they don't get it right 100% of the time. Yeah. They really don't.
I agree with Inzaghi. I'm sorry, lads. It does but take emotion out of football.
For me, you just said it yourself. You know, you're old-fashioned. The game's moving on. You need to move on with the time.
Yeah, but, well, maybe I won't enjoy football as much.
Put it this way, right? How many games have you watched in Europe this season? Like Serie A, La Liga, Bundesliga? Bundesliga and Serie A, they've both got VR. How many games do you think you've watched, roughly?
A lot.
Okay, so, and how many of those games have had decisions that VAR's been used?
A lot, especially in Germany.
Right, okay. How many times have you seen a decision go, and then they go to the VAR... The referee gives a penalty when it wasn't given originally.
Yeah.
And then the team that conceded the penalty start complaining to the referee about giving a penalty.
Happened in Germany, didn't it?
It happens all
it
the
did
time.
It happened in Germany
whenever,
a couple of weeks ago.
Whenever a decision goes against the team that the VAR's for, the players go mad. They're like, well, the decision's there, the VAR's there. That's the whole point. So why are you
they're looking at it on a big screen and they just can't see it. They refuse to see it, you know?
It doesn't make sense.
It's a really contentious issue. It really, really is. But, I mean, like, Jan's got a good point. At some point, you've got to have that opportunity to have that discussion. You know, talk sports still need people to phone in and complain about stuff, don't they? You know?
Well, look, put it this way. At the end of the day, it's a new thing that's going to be brought to the game. We're going to have 5, 6, 7 years of people complaining about this and that, and then we'll just get used to it. We got used to the back pass rule. We got used to this. Well, we haven't got used to the offside rule yet because they keep constantly changing it. But as Rod said, the game's evolving and we've just got
to we're constantly getting used to bad referees.
But only in this country.
Again tonight.
Only in this country, the Italian refereeing is phenomenal for me. The standard of Italian.
Well, the refereeing is for being a professional referee. Some of them are so arrogant and so bad. Yeah. It's untrue. No, Mike Dean is just a joke.
So is Mike Wallace.
He's refereeing. Yeah.
Rod, can I ask you a question? Because this is something that I find really curious. That most of these referees are earning about 70 grand a year, and I often wonder if whether or not they're recruiting in the wrong places. And whether or not they should be looking at footballers from the first and second division to move into refereeing, like they do in cricket, like they do in rugby. They'll learn a good deal. They played the game at a good level. They understand the game a hell of a lot better than most referees do. They're already physically fit and they understand the game. And I just wonder whether or not we're missing a trick in not offering this opportunity to like players that are retiring to become referees for the next sort of 10 or 15 years.
You put it on mute, Rod. You mute your mic.
We can't hear you, Rod.
Rod, you've muted your mic.
I just don't think you'll find the players willing to
do it.
No, it's just they get so much abuse, especially at starting off. Yeah. I just don't think they'll be able to tolerate it. I think some of them have started, but they just end up just walking out because they won't be able to tolerate the abuse.
They'll be biased as well, Rod, won't they?
Pardon?
They'll be biased as well. Imagine like Gerrard going to referee at Old Trafford.
No, but
exactly.
Referees aren't allowed to do that. They've got to be within a certain catchment. They can't referee a...
Yeah, what about if it was a big game, United against, I don't know, Arsenal, I think.
Well, then they'll get someone from Cornwall to referee it. Do you know what I mean?
There's always something.
I don't know. I just think like there's a big problem with refereeing. Like, I agree with you. The Italian refs, I think, are far superior.
Yes.
And I just think that we need to try and investigate a way of improving the standard. We know it's really hard. I'm not going to sit here and pretend like it's not a really difficult job. Because it is. But I just wonder whether or not it's another problem where we're not sort of future-proofing ourselves for something that's going to happen in the next 5 or 6 years. You know? It's a bit like HMV not realising that the internet's going to take all their business, you know?
Well, look, you mentioned former footballers. Whenever I hear that former footballers possibly going into refereeing, Tony Filiskirk, do you remember him? Played for Oldham back in the day. Yeah? Mm-hmm. He spent 2 years as a referee, and he was one of 15 other former footballers that went on a course back in 96 as part of a PFA scheme to get ex-footballers into coaching and refereeing, and none of them have emerged, yeah, so says it all, really, doesn't it?
Yep,
that's right.
There you go. Right, let's wrap up our show with one more thing, and that's Steve McLaren. Rod, he's quit as coaching consultant of Maccabi Tel Aviv, the club Jordi Cruyff manages, to pursue other options. Now, what other options could he mean? I mean, I'd have thought he'd like to lay low for a bit, given his recent track record. Rod?
Did he mute us again?
He's muted us again, yeah.
Say again, you got cut then.
Steve McLaren, he's left his job at Maccabi Tel Aviv. That's the club that that Jordi Cruyff is managing, and he says he wants to explore new options. But what options do you think they are?
Well, I didn't even know he was there, but I'm not sure. He'd just retire.
He was a coaching consultant, whatever that is. But I think he's been linked to the Sheffield Wednesday job, which could be a bit of a strange one there.
No, I'm just being jovial. You mentioned Steve McLaren before about that not being a good coach, a good manager. You know, he's gone to Holland and won the league, so that was no mean feat. And he did an okay job at Middlesbrough. I remember him beating United a couple of times. So it's just one of roundabout for these coaches and managers. And it depends what he wants to do, because he's got the credentials and the CV for it. Just obviously, yes, Sheffield Wednesday would be a good fit for him. And I thought it'd work out for him at Derby, but obviously it didn't work out for him. So, but yeah, these coaching or doing these roles in Tel Aviv or Vietnam or wherever these places are, I don't see benefits from it, to be honest.
Do you think the game has changed since he was at his peak, Rod? Because I mean, you mentioned him winning the league with 20 in Eredivisie, but he hasn't really done anything since. He went to Germany with Wolfsburg. He failed. He was at Derby. Forest. It was a couple more clubs in England, and he hasn't really moved on. I think that England job kind of was a kick in the balls to the guy, and I think he's more of a. He should be taking more of a consultancy role, like what he did at Maccabi, as opposed to being in the front line.
Yeah, like I say, mate, it's a difficult one. He's never really got a spot down and done a really, really, really good job. I've been there three years, and moved on. So, you know, it's just a merry-go-round for him at the minute. But like I say, you see these managers. How's Alan Pardew got a Premiership manager's job? He won about three games for Crystal Palace in a year, yet he gets a Premiership job. So who knows? You'll probably end up being. Probably end up a Premiership job. Who knows? This world's going.
It was the FA Cup final dance that got him the job. That was his audition.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if he gets a Wednesday job.
Who?
McLaren. It's a good shout.
Yeah. Good one. Yeah. Right, that's it for this evening, guys. Thank you ever so much for your time. Thanks for joining us. Robbie, thank you for coming back on, mate. It's been a while.
Oh, it's been a pleasure, boys. I've really enjoyed it.
Great stuff.
It's been lovely. One last thing before I go.
Yep.
Before I go. Preston North End's Kevin O'Connor, my dad's team, Preston North End.
I've just seen this on the news.
£1 million this evening on the Irish lottery.
Oh, really?
Do you know how he won it?
Yeah, his uncle bought him a ticket, or his grandfather bought him a ticket as a Christmas present.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say congratulations to him. I was wondering whether or not he'd be willing to spend it on some players for Preston. Eddie Hemmings doesn't want to, so. Anyway, yeah.
Fantastic, that's a great.
At Robbie Richmond on the Twitter, ROBBY.
Great stuff.
I'm annoying, by the way. Fair warning.
Don't worry, it's all good. You should follow him. Rod.
Rod James Giggs. I don't ask for managers to leave after 2 minutes. I'm a good sport. Yeah.
Oh, we're laughing at you, Jan.
We're still waiting for Holland to get back to us.
and in the new year he's lost that pillow, yeah. It's gone missing.
It's gone. We'll have to buy him one. I should have bought him one for Christmas.
Yeah, where's my Christmas present?
I'll get you a Christmas present. I'll get you a late one. I'll get you a late Christmas and a late birthday present. What's your Twitter?
Yannick is J. I ask for better football managers to leave.
And we're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. I have one when I'm back out of Twitter jail. I tweet horrible things to Mkhitaryan. I'm not going to give you my handle. You can find me. You can just do a search for Mkhitaryan and a four-letter word, and you'll see all of my tweets. Until next time, guys, we'll be back, and take care of yourselves. Ta-ra.
Bye.